In this sentence, Jesus gives the central theme of the Sermon on the Mount. The whole purpose of man's life is stated here. And the same theme is at the heart of every religion. Seek perfection. Realize God. We have an idea of what perfection might be when it comes to physical objects or intellectual or moral goals, though individual standards may differ. But what is meant by divine perfection? As long as our minds dwell within the world of relativity, within time, space, and causation, we cannot know what this perfection is, because it is absolute. We have only a vague idea that it refers to a state of completion, of abiding peace and fulfillment. Every human being wishes to find fulfillment and perfection in his relations with other human beings, in his work, in every field of life. But when he achieves the goals the world has to offer, he is still not satisfied. He may be surrounded by a fine family and loyal friends, enjoy wealth and good health, beauty and fame, and nevertheless be haunted by a sense of lack and frustration. Of course, it is quite true that our desires can be temporarily appeased in this world. We can have some measure of pleasure and success, but we always forget that these are impermanent. If we accept pleasure and success, we must be ready to accept pain and failure. Kapila, a philosopher of ancient India, expressed the state of perfection negatively as complete cessation of misery. The Vedic sages tried to express it positively as Sat, immortal life, Chit, infinite knowledge, and Ananda, eternal love and bliss. Behind every human effort there is the desire, unconscious and misdirected though it may be, to find Sat Chit Ananda. In other words, the supreme reality, God. But since most of us are not aware that to find God is our real purpose in life, we continue to repeat the same enjoyments and sufferings over and over again. We waste our energies in ephemeral achievements, looking for infinite reward in the finite. Only after we have passed through many experiences of pleasure and pain does spiritual discrimination dawn in us. Then we begin to see that nothing in this world can give us lasting satisfaction. Then we understand that the desire for abiding happiness, for perfection, can be fulfilled only in the eternal truth of God. We have the right to aspire to that perfection, for it is our divine heritage. In the words of St. Paul, "The Spirit itself beareth witness with our spirit that we are the children of God. And if children, then heirs, heirs of God, and joint heirs with Christ." But where do we find perfection? Where is God? According to Vedanta, there is a divine ground, Brahman, underlying the universe of name and form. It is omnipresent. Therefore, it exists within every creature and object in the universe, as well as beyond them. Considered in its immanent aspect, Brahman is called the Atman, the self within. But this is merely a convenient term which does not imply any difference between the two. Atman and Brahman are one. When the mind has been purified through spiritual disciplines and is able to turn inward upon itself, man realizes that his true being is Atman Brahman. To uncover this true being or divinity which lies hidden within oneself is to become perfect. This is the technique of all mystical practice. Christ himself taught us to seek God within. In the Gospel, according to St. Luke, we read, "The kingdom of God cometh not with observation, neither shall they say, Lo, here, or Lo, there, for behold, the kingdom of God is within you." This statement has sometimes been interpreted to mean that Christ lived amidst his disciples on earth. But if we do not accept Christ's statement as referring to the divinity within man, how can we understand his prayer to the Father? I in them, and thou in me, that they may be made perfect in one. Nor the Apostle Paul's reminder to the Corinthians, Know ye not that ye are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you? What prevents us from realizing this truth that God is always present within us? It is our ignorance, the false identification of our true nature, which is spirit, with body, mind, senses, and intellect. And the light shineth in the darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. The light of God is shining, but the veil of our ignorance covers that light. This ignorance is a direct and immediate experience. It can only be removed by another direct and immediate experience, God realization. The difference between ignorance and God realization is, as Buddha stated, like that between sleep and awakening. In our ignorance, it is hard for us to believe that God can be realized. In fact, many individuals resist the idea. Yet in every age there have been great souls who saw God, talked with him, and experienced union with him. Teachers like Jesus, Buddha, and Sri Ramakrishna not only realized God, but insisted that everyone must do so. A Vedic seer exclaimed, I have known that great being of effulgent light beyond all darkness. You also, having known that truth, go beyond death. And Jesus declared, And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. The experience of that truth is made possible through transformation, or, in the words of Jesus, spiritual rebirth. Except a man be born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God. Commenting on this statement, the German mystic Angelus Silesius said, Christ may be born 1,000 times in Bethlehem, but if he be not born anew within your own heart, you remain eternally forlorn. What does it mean to have Christ born anew in our hearts? Ordinarily, the Upanishads tell us man lives within 3 states of consciousness: waking, dreaming, and dreamless sleep. In these 3 states, it is not possible to see God. But beyond these 3, there is a state called the 4th, which is known to the mystics, a state which transcends time, space, and causation. It is Christ's kingdom of God. What is experienced in this 4th is not contradicted at any time by any other experience. Unlike fantasies in the dream state, which are contradicted when we wake up. Although the 4th transcends the senses and the mind, it does not contradict reason. When it illumines the heart, a permanent transformation of character takes place. We are reborn in spirit and become perfect. In this transcendental state, all awareness of the world and of multiplicity is obliterated. Brahman alone exists, and the peace which passeth all understanding is known. The Hindus call this state samadhi, Buddhists call it nirvana, and Christians call it the mystical union, or union with God. But few individuals enter this kingdom of God, because few struggle to find it. As the Gita says, Who cares to seek for that perfect freedom? One man, perhaps, in many thousands. Of course, there are millions of Christians today who attend churches regularly, and millions of Hindus and Buddhists who worship in temples and pagodas. But of those who do, few seek perfection in God. Most people are satisfied with living a more or less ethical life on earth in the hope of being rewarded in an afterlife for any good deeds they may have done. Christ's ideal of perfection is generally either forgotten or misunderstood. True, many people read the Sermon on the Mount, but few try to live its teachings. Most people argue whether one can find God, or whether perfection can be achieved or not, or what Christ meant by knowing the truth or seeing God. But this much I can say, that when Christ spoke to his disciples, he meant literally that God could be seen in their present lives. And the disciples were hungering just for that truth, to know God, to be perfect, even as the Father in heaven is perfect. How can a spiritual aspirant who is longing for the truth be satisfied with theology, with philosophy, with doctrines and creeds? Sri Ramakrishna used to tell the devotees, "You have come to the mango garden. What good is it to count the leaves on the trees? Eat the mangoes and satisfy your hunger." Similarly, Christ taught his disciples how to know God, how to realize him while living in the world. He did not state that divine perfection can be attained only after the death of the body. If we go to the actual founders of the world's great religions, we find that one truth expressed: realize God here and now. The great obstacle in the path of God realization is mankind's laziness and lack of enthusiasm. Buddha called procrastination in the struggle for enlightenment the greatest sin, and Christ expressed the same idea when he said, "No man, having put his hand to the plow and looking back, is fit for the kingdom of God." There are several methods by which perfection in God may be reached. When perfection is achieved, every aspect of the aspirant's being is illumined. But it is natural for the methods, or paths to perfection, to focus certain tendencies in human character. For it's obvious that some people are thoughtful, some emotional, some active or contemplative, and that their spiritual practices should reflect their characters. In Vedanta, four main paths to the attainment of union with God are generally recognized. These paths, or yogas, are useful in clarifying the way to perfection as taught by Jesus. In Karma Yoga, the path of selfless work, every action is offered to God as a sacrament. By dedicating the fruits of one's work to God, the spiritual aspirant eventually achieves purity of heart and attains union with God. Jnana Yoga.